Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. And what I have today is actually a client video. And this is going to be a video. So the first minute introduction part right now is not a video, just a still frame. But we are going to an actual video in case you are watching this on the private YouTube channel. But first off, this video is for informational purposes only. Many of you who are watching this are my current clients, so please talk to your advisor, aka me, if you have any questions. And if you aren't a client, then what are you waiting for? With that said, any mention of individual stocks or indexes is just for that, just for educational and illustrative purposes only, and aren't meant to be buy or sell recommendations. Past performance is no indication of future returns, and please don't put all of your money into Bitcoin. So this podcast was actually filmed, or video client update was filmed yesterday on the 22nd. So I'm not trying to do this on just days when the Dow is down or the S&P 500 is down. But you know, if I was waiting for updates in October, there'd be very few days where I could actually make videos. But what we're going to do today is actually have a little bit of a recap from the last video I made. If you've not watched that last video, I'd highly recommend it. We're going to also talk about the New York trip that I was on, spend 1 minute talking about the recent Ironman. Then we're going to do a breakdown of, you know, who Innovative Advisory Group is versus TD Ameritrade versus Liberty Advisor, because I know a lot of you guys have had questions and all that. Then about 8 minutes from here, you've got the Financial Market Podcast starts. We begin talking about the different financial markets. Then 15 minutes in, I get into the importance of sequence of return risk. This would be a great thing to rewatch if you have already seen it, and really a great thing to keep in your mind as we are sort of in the late innings of, you know, with the World Series going on and with Innovative being headquarters up, I guess, outside of Boston. You know, we are in my opinion, the late stages of a baseball game. And sometimes in the late stages, things can go up the most. I remember buying Ethereum at $70, feeling like an idiot because I was trying to get in when it was at $4 and then got, busy. And, you know, a few weeks later, boom, it goes up and felt like an idiot. But ultimately, it went to $1,200 before settling around like the $200 mark. So the point of the story is nobody really knows where the tops of these things are, but we have risk management strategies in place that are absolutely paramount to make sure that we get the most out of these situations and that we're able to protect your wealth as greatly as possible. Then at the 23-minute mark, we get into a CNBC clip where a former Fed governor compares what's going on today in the markets to a heroin and cocaine analogy. So definitely want to stay tuned for that. And then at the 25-minute mark, I go back into the archives where I was on a podcast and I said one of the two worst things you could do with your money would be to bet against a certain index. And 2 weeks later, people that were foolish enough to do just that lost over 90% of their money. So this is, again, today is the 23rd. The rest of this podcast was filmed yesterday on the 22nd. As I'm mentioning this right now, the Dow is down just a little bit over 400 points. It was down closer to 500 this morning. And ultimately, even if there is nothing but good news, it is the good news that is going to lead to the bubble popping, because the bubble, the pin in this case, in my opinion, is the interest rates. And so the better things get, the less excuse you have to not raise rates. And that is ultimately going to be what pops this bubble, because this is a market that is absolutely reliant on, if you go to the 23-minute mark, and that's 23 minutes after this introductory little salvo here, where the former Fed governor compares it to heroin and cocaine. And so if you are trying to get off heroin and cocaine cold turkey, and you were a big time addict, that could kill you. And if you don't get off it and you stay on it forever, that could also kill you. So we're sort of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. This is a really important time when a lot of people right now are just, you know, whistling past the graveyard. They're absolutely not worried about the real issues. You turn on the financial media, they're not talking about, you know, the European Central Bank and how they're going to stop their money printing program. I think I just read earlier today that on Zero Hedge that you had Italy was asking Russia to start buying some of their bonds because Italy is so far in debt, and really they've only been able to get float by as it stands because the European Central Bank has been buying their debt. Well, that party's coming to an end very soon. So, you know, when the music stops, you want to make sure you have a chair. And if you want to make sure you're going to have a chair, talk to myself at tim@innovativewealth.com. That's innovativewealth.com. Or you can go to my website at thelibertyadvisor.com. But anyways, without further ado, hope you guys enjoy and talk to you later. Hello, everyone. It is Monday, October 22nd, and a lot has happened since the last video we've shot. And if you guys have not seen the last video, shot it on October 2nd, I would highly recommend you guys go back and watch that. And right now I'm putting all these up on a private YouTube channel. So it's something I don't advertise, and I'm going to just put out the video to my clients. Whereas, you know, the average person out there is going to get a update via podcast. So I do have Liberty Advisor podcast. It's not, client specific or financial planning specific. And so there might be some things on there that you don't like or don't agree with, and that's fine. You can just stick to these. But just for some of you who are out there, you know, if you're, that is something that you're interested in, just wanted to make sure that you were aware of that. But, you know, first off, just want to let everybody know that I was up in New York State, upstate New York, a couple weeks ago, and it was great seeing most of my clients who still reside in upstate New York. It was great seeing most of them. And a few of them, actually several of us, went to dinner at Delmonico's. I'm looking at having one of those being set up over for my Arizona clients. Not sure if I could sneak it in between the holidays, but a good time was had by all. At least I think a good time was had by everybody, and even gave away some crypto for those who I guess were lucky enough to attend. And speaking of trying to sneak in something, yesterday actually I snuck in another half Ironman, so that was going to be my fifth half Ironman. Moved around kind of sore today, as to be expected, but did hit a new PR after only training for 7 weeks, and had my girls out there cheering for me. So it was really good. I know a lot of you sometimes ask me about that, if I'm still doing it. And I was sort of thinking about hanging it up. I pretty much hung it up the past 2 years, and then really just had to gut out I think it was 8:20 mile for the last mile in order to hit the PR. So, you know, very, very happy with that. But anyways, you guys are not tuning into this to hear triathlon updates, so I'm not going to bother you anymore with this. But one of my clients, and actually several clients have alluded to this, which means that I need to definitely address it, and it's definitely something that I take full responsibility for, and really the confusing breakdown of how various entities work within, who's, Innovative and what's TD Ameritrade and what's Liberty Advisor, and it was all getting confused in my head. So what I want to do is, what I want to direct you to is a little flow chart that we made over here. So we got Innovative Advisory Group. In this case, there was sort of like what Focal Point was, where it's, it's, but I guess it's more like what WealthCare is. But anyways, long story short, they are the RAA. They handle my compliance and portfolio management. So Rajiv is the head of our compliance, one of the sharpest guys around when it comes to self-directed IRAs. He was described by one of the custodians as basically the Lennox Lewis of the space, meaning that, if you want somebody in your corner to go fight for you, you've got one of the best guys around. Guy's brilliant, knows pretty much everything about the space and alternative investments. Then we also have Kirk Chisholm, who is our portfolio manager, and just, all around, has been spending a ton of time mentoring me, and has been, really helping me scale my business, and is really, we saw last month, being September, now October, are the two biggest months I've had in terms of new clients coming on board, which I know is greatly appreciated. And if you guys know more people who could benefit by trying to get out ahead of what we think is coming, I think you'd really do themselves a favor. And obviously, introduction to anybody would be very appreciative over here on my end. But so we've got Innovative Advisory Group. They handle my compliance, to the portfolio management, help keep me out of trouble. TD Ameritrade is simply the custodian that we use for all of our traditional stuff. Now, we do have alternative asset custodians, but that's few and far between as a percentage of clients who are in that right now. And the ones who are in that definitely know what they are into right now, so I don't want to confuse anybody else. But they aren't the only custodian that we that we can use. So I'm sure as things change in the future, especially when it comes to the cryptocurrency space, this is ever evolving. It was just announced that Fidelity last week is coming out with a custody solution. So we'll have to see what that looks like. So, we're not married to any one of these companies. We've got no financial incentive to keep your money at one place versus another. We are truly basically, a free agent out there looking for your best interest. And now where it starts getting confusing is, originally I was going to call my practice the Liberty Advisor, and then Innovative is going to be, behind the scenes, and they were just going to be the RAA, sort of like when you had Focal Point was, the DBA, the doing business name that we put out there to market ourselves. But then WealthCare did the RAA compliance, and LPL was a broker dealer and a custodian. Well, now we got rid of the broker dealer. We have no more broker dealer component at all. And the custodian in this case is TD Ameritrade. For most of you,
But it doesn't have to be, and we're not married to them. So, you know, it's great having options over here, and I definitely love it. Now, getting back to the Liberty Advisor, just my own personal branding. You know, a lot of you know me, that, you know, been into, you know, the, I guess, the freedom, you know, libertarian movement for a while, and it's really sort of the branding I'm going with. And then, and also with branding for the crypto specific portion of the business, I was calling it Crypto Self Direct, which is more or less just a marketing name. But, you know, really, for the most part, all you really need to know is Innovative Advisor Group handles the compliance. TD holds on to your money to make sure it's not like a Bernie Madoff situation where all of a sudden, you know, they're just going to run away with their money because I don't have it. TD Ameritrade has it. And yeah, so that is that. And then I guess the only other thing I would mention is with eMoney. There's another name that gets thrown around. They provide the data aggregation software and financial planning software, which, you know, if you're not on it right now, you know, definitely call us up, call myself up, and or send me an email, and I'll help get you on there. And then going back to Innovative real quick. So a lot of you have been receiving emails from Daniel Wood. Unfortunately, it is his last month with us, and he's going to be replaced by Joel. So I know that both Daniel and Rajiv have been busy training Joel. I think I inundated him with a lot of new account forms, and since we weren't set up with everything being DocuSign yet, and I don't think he really needed the money, so we were turning his part-time position into a full-time position, making him too busy. That wasn't really what he wanted to do, and you know, I've been a great guy, and now we'll definitely miss him, and now we're going to have Joel to help us out, and he's still on board right now, so right now I am doing my best to make sure he is getting the money's worth the past, I guess, for his last week and a half, because I've got a lot of new business that we are throwing his way, which is definitely a very good thing. So shifting gears here a little bit, the last podcast or last video client market update thing came out on October 2nd. I think I released it on October 3rd. The very next day is when I guess the first bout of the carnage started happening. So over here on the screen, we've got, you know, the Dow Jones is down 4.4% since the last video. We've got NASDAQ is down 5.1%. We've got somebody ringing my doorbell right now, ruining the video. All right, now I was actually hoping that was going to be an Amazon package, because that would be a perfect segue to the next stock we have here. So we got Amazon in the light pink over here. So it looks like that's down 11% since the last video. And I'm bringing up Amazon and Netflix. So those are two of the stocks that I mentioned in the last video. Netflix being down, looks like 11.7. It looks like we just said, Amazon is down 11. I also mentioned the ITB, which is the basically the U.S. Home Builders Index. That's down 13.5%. I believe it was down already like 28% last time we checked. So, I mean, it was down already a ton. And, you know, and if you take a look at all these canaries in the coal mine, I mean, if you got housing stocks that are absolutely, you know, crashing right now, I've got all this used car inventory building up. So, I mean, you got home and autos that helped lead to 2008 collapse. And yet, you know, now you've got, you know, a situation where, you know, a good deal of these, of the S&P 500 is already in bear market territory. I'm going to go to a clip right here, but here we've got CNBC, where they even admit that already 25% of the S&P 500 stocks are already in bear market territory.
Major sectors, first tech stocks, which have been moving for the last week as rates have moved up. Second problem is industrial names, Caterpillar, Boeing, 3M, all of those moving to the downside. You heard it from Tyler. We did this in the last hour. 60% of the S&P 500 stocks are 10% or more off of their 52-week highs, many of which hit earlier in the year, and about 25% are down 20% or more, what we normally call a bear market. So large swaths of the market are already there. I want to point out some key sectors that are also 20% or more from their 52-week highs. We've talked about home construction for a long time. We've talked about gaming in the last...
Sure, I was going to look up this clip. I didn't even see this part here. So it's, you know, perfect segue that I was just talking about home construction being down like well over 20%, and boom, you know, there you go. And interestingly enough, today I was watching CNBC, and they had mentioned that basically that the CNBC home builders that they had, or CNBC interviewed a whole bunch of home builders or did, you know, one of these surveys or polls, and they had actually never been more confident. So here they are down 28%, but yet have never felt more confident. So, you know, who knows? I mean, things are getting pretty crazy. And if you take a look at different numbers, I mean, you always are going to have a peak confidence before the crash. I mean, and that was really what was missing in 2000, basically when Obama came, and that people are so pessimistic to begin with that it's hard to have a major crash after another crash when people are already pessimistic to begin with. And one of the reasons why, you know, people are stating, you know, hey, Tim, you know, well, the economy is, you know, never been stronger. And, you know, the unemployment rate, you know, is, you know, we're at a low since, I forgot the exact year, it was like 1969. Well, what people don't understand is that in 1969, they counted unemployment a lot differently than today. I mean, so imagine if you were, let's say, you graduated with a degree in, I don't know, like mechanical engineering. And now all of a sudden, you decide that, hey, I want to be a, you know, mechanical engineer, but you can't find a job as a mechanical engineer. So maybe now you're working at McDonald's. Well, if you were way overqualified for that job and you were really trying and actively trying to pursue a job as a mechanical engineer, you would be counted as unemployed in 1969. And today you're not. So, I mean, that's just one of the small spattering. I mean, this goes on so long, I could actually write a book on it. And actually, I did write a little book on it. So eventually what we'll do is we'll actually turn this into its own video series, because right now, you know, I don't want to do it justice. But if you go to howitsrigged.com, you can put in your email right there. I mean, I already have everyone's email, so it's not going to be spamming you guys. I mean, if anything, I need to be, you know, reaching out more, not less. So if you go to howitsrigged.com, I've got a 16-page little ebook that breaks this all down. And it's just so frustrating because Trump, as a candidate, was calling out. I mean, I think he said at one point that the unemployment rate was as high as 40%. And then, you know, probably a dozen times he mentioned it was over 20%. So how do you go from, you know, the 40% number, I mean, that's just absolutely crazy. I mean, he was talking about, you know, if you take a look at the amount of adults that are in the labor force, you multiply by like a 40-hour work week, and then you come up with the amount of actual hours that were worked, that basically there could be, you know, that we're only at, you know, 60% capacity of that. And that's how they came up with that number. But, you know, but the other 20%, I know where they came, where it comes from. It has to do with how they've always changed. They're always moving the goalposts. They're always using, I mean, imagine like one day you're saying, oh, hey, you know, I ran, you know, an 8-minute mile, but then, you know, the next day you're measuring it in sticks of cheese. I mean, they just always make this stuff up as they go to really make themselves seem as best as possible. Another thing they always mention is, you know, well, Obama never hit 3% year over year GDP growth. And I'd like to remind people that so far, neither has Trump. He's had, I believe, 2 quarters above 3%. Obama had, I think it was like 7 quarters above 3%. He had some quarters over 4. I believe he even had one that was over 5%. And I wish I had the podcast going back then, because, you know, I've already forgotten so much of this stuff. And that's part of the reason why I'm doing this, is so that way, you know, I can kind of go back and, you know, relive all these different nuances of things that were going on back then. I know that Obama definitely, he gamed some things where they, you know, moved things from one quarter to put it into another quarter to try to get things looking really good for an election. Back in the one quarter, he did get the 5.3%, or, you know, had all this military spending when we're back, you know, starting to get into involved with Libya. But anyways, I digress. Doesn't really matter too much. But right now, you've got the deficit actually is, you know, absolutely exploding. You know, the debt went up by over $1 trillion last year. It was only, they only accounted for like 780 something billion of it, because certain things they don't count. And as part of, so even if though, you know, the debt went up by over $1 trillion, they don't actually count some of the spending that the government does. So you've got, you know, an extra $100 billion for a hurricane. Well, oh, that doesn't count. And, you know, lots of different things like that, that they do. Now you also have, you know, the interest rate, the yields are absolutely exploding from where they were before. I did touch on this quite a bit in the last podcast, and how you've had all the different central banks they went from basically printing money to now most of the banks are now actually going to be, or really it's the Federal Reserve is selling $600 billion worth of bonds. Now their activity, that just started the $600 billion plateau that they just got to, that which is going to be $50 billion per month. That was just achieved this month in October. So, you know, we started off small and we started ratcheting it up to the point where we got to this point. But a lot of that was masked because of the Trump tax cuts. But those were, those tax cuts mainly went to repatriating money back to America for them Fortune 500 companies to then buy their stocks. So then that way they had less stock outstanding, which then increases the price of their shares. But, you know, George W. Bush did the same thing. I can't remember the exact year. It was like 2004, 2005. And then, you know, look what happened, you know, 3-4 years later, the market was way down from where it was before. So that was like a short-term sort of gimmick. And believe me, I'm all for lower taxes. I'm not criticizing that. But, you know, at the end of a bull market, you know, injecting these kind of steroids when, you know, we're already in sort of a precarious position, I mean, that's something that you probably want to, you know, hold on to, because, you know, what types of tricks they're going to have up their sleeve next time there is a crash. I mean, there's really not too much more for the rates to go down. Or what about the real scenario that the Fed, you know, doesn't talk about? They don't stress test. So what happens if the inflation rate's going up while the economic numbers are going down? Then, you know, what are you going to do? You know, so are you going to print more money? I mean, printing more money when the inflation rate's already going up is going to be, you know, a terrible idea. And then, you know, then are you just going to let everything crash? I mean, and then they can't actually afford to let things crash this time because in 2008, the baby boomers were just turning 62 years old, so they weren't having to retire. Well, now, you know, every day, 10,000 are turning 72. And now they're being forced to take money out of their 401ks. It's a different animal this time around than last time. And what I want to direct you to now is actually a presentation. This is like a 2 or 3 minute little intro deal I did, but just hold on just 2 seconds while we load this up. All right, and hope you guys enjoy. And this is what I'm really trying to mitigate against when we talk about risk and trying to make sure that everyone's going to be able to hit their retirement goals. Now, this is the big enchilada.
Thank you. But one thing I really want to talk about today, and what I want to scream at from the top of, you know, a roof, and it would just shake people if I could to understand, is the concept of something called sequence of return risk. And what that is first I'll start off and give this example where this shows person A and person B, and they both have the exact same returns except they're the meter of one another. So they're just flipped, the inverse. So they average the same, and since they're accumulating funds, they both end up with the same amount of money 10 years later because they're not withdrawing any funds. So there's no sequence of return risk when you are accumulating funds. But however, when you start introducing losses into the equation, so let's say you go down 20%, you have to go back up 25% to get back to even. If you go down 50%, you have to go up 100% to get back to even. Some more people are familiar with this concept, but what they're not as familiar with is, let's say you're withdrawing 4%. So you've got $1 million, you're taking $40,000 a year out to live on. If that's the case, if the market goes down 20%, you've got to go up 42% over the next 3 years to get back to even. So at 50, so if you go down 50%, you actually have to go up 132% just to get back to even. So a lot of people are not aware of this. And where this really comes into play is before I showed you what was happening when you're accumulating funds. Now, this is what happens when you are when you're taking distributions. So you've got two people, they've got the exact same scenario going on. They're both taking $50,000 a year out. They both started with $1 million. Investor A had 3 bad years at the beginning of their retirement, and investor B had 3 bad years 8, 9, 10 years later. And what you can see is investor A actually has $630,000, and investor B had $1.074 million. They both averaged the exact same return. And so what you, a lot of times what you don't see on CNBC, we don't really see anything good on there, but a lot of times, or I call it CNBS, but so a lot of people don't understand that, you know, no one can predict what the market's going to look like the day they retire. And so if you retire and then all of a sudden you've got a bad year, if you didn't have an advisor that already proactively planned for that, you're probably in for some bad news, because now this person that has $630,000, you know, they're going to be in a rough spot or go out of money. But now what I want to do is I want to give you a real life example of how this has actually worked in the past. So this, the source from this is Prudential and the Limber Fact Book. This is someone that started off with $500,000. They were withdrawing 4.05%, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. And what I want to show you is that if some, the person that started off with $500,000 who retired in April of 1970, after 30 years, had a little over $2.5 million left. The person that retired just 1 year before them had a little over $500,000 left. And the person that retired 4 months before them ran out of money after 29 years. And this is, you see, there's a 16-month window here. And so a lot of times you see all these talking heads say, oh, well, you know, the market averages this, it averages that, but they never talk about sequence of return risk. I actually recently just bought sequenceofreturnrisk.com.
Now, the reason why I decided to show that clip is because, you know, the sequence of return risk is something that a lot of people, you know, get lulled to sleep with when you're 10 years into an expansion and you've already forgotten about 2008, you've already forgotten about what happened in, you know, 2099 timeframe of the dot-com bubble. And it just seems like, you know, we're really just gearing towards something. And now with Donald Trump got elected, basically the optimism surrounding that really sort of, you know, lack of a better word, trumped everything else that was going on. Plus, you know, you get a little bit of deregulation, you get, you know, tax cuts, and all this stuff, you know, really, you know, amounted to what's gone on. But all that can be wiped out in the blink of an eye. I mean, all that can be wiped out easily within 1 month. And, you know, historically in the market, that's happened lots of times. So what we're doing to protect that, not to give a, you know, commercial, but this is videos for my clients, is right now we have the protective growth portfolios where we've got options hedging the downside. So, you know, if the market goes down, you know, let's say 50%, you'll probably be down. Hopefully for the parts that are hedged, at least some of you may have some unhedged positions in there, which we actually hope would rise in this type of environment, but I can't make any guarantees, especially on this type of public platform. But, you know, for the general indexes that are hedged, you know, if they're down 50 and hopefully, you know, you're only down like 3 or 4, just really the cost of what that option was if the option's held to maturity. Now, you know, there could be some divergence between, you know, let's say one stock is down 10%, the option might not be up 10 because you've got to wait until, you know, because by the time you exercise, if you wait until the exercise date, it should equal, just because otherwise, because computers are trading this stuff, making arbitrage, and there's never going to be a case where there's a gigantic spread because the computers would just trade that spread away because it would be free money. So you're never going to really see that in the real world. But, you know, if the market's down 10 and maybe, you know, the put option's only up 8, it's because, you know, it hasn't hit the expiration date yet, because as you get closer to the expiration, that's where they should more closely start to equal out. But, you know, in this environment where, you know, I ultimately think that because the Fed can't actually ever have another crash just because of the sequence of return. And the reason that sequence is so important is getting back to the pension funds. Most of them are 35, 40% underfunded. So as soon as they take any hit at all, they're done. And the hit could come from interest rates. And so they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't, from so many different directions. And I see so many people taking victory laps on what's going on. This is the absolute worst time to be taking a victory lap. This is the absolute, you know, it's great that, you know, if you're like an alcoholic and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you maybe used to drink, you know, a bottle of Jim Beam a night, and now you're drinking, you know, maybe taking 3 shots. Well, you guess what? You still, you know, yeah, it's a big improvement, but you still haven't gotten off it yet. And so, you know, at this rate, you know, we're trying to do the exact opposite of what got us here, and thinking that, you know, that there won't be any consequences. And one of my favorite financial analysts, and I wish I made this up, but one of the analogies he used is, he goes, you know how you see, you know, magicians, and they have the trick where they take the, take the curtain and they pull out, or, you know, they take the tablecloth and they yank it out from the table. And then, you know, if the trick goes well, then what they should have is hopefully, you know, all of the glasses and china still on the table, and they've got the tablecloth in their hands. Well, what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is they're trying to take out the table in hopes that everything else is going to stay on there. And just because this stuff is over most people's heads, is I think we really have been absolutely lulled to sleep. And one of the videos I want to get to right now is former Dallas Fed Chairman Richard Fisher, and how he describes what has been going on the past few years in the from the central banks.
Its course, I like to say that we injected cocaine and heroin into the system, and now we're maintaining our Ritalin. How's that?
You know how
shareholders and.
But are you surprised that it hasn't really had as much of the desired effect in the real economy? I mean, part of the aim of QE, was to stimulate asset prices.
Create a wealth effect, which would then go down to the middle income categories. It hasn't worked as effectively, and it took longer. In the 7-year cycle, we're now getting to a point where
So translating what Richard Fisher just said in English, I mean, obviously you got the heroin and cocaine part of that, and he was just saying that we've been using so much stimulus in the economy that, you know, of course things are going to eventually get better because from a asset level standpoint, because what the QE, quantitative easing, aka money printing, what it was designed to do was to lift asset prices. So now what they're doing is now they are doing the exact opposite. We're calling it QT, or quantitative tightening. So if doing one thing is supposed to make things go up and you do the exact opposite of it, I mean, am I really, you know, a conspiracy theorist or that crazy to think that might have the effect of making it actually go down? Now, the current Fed chair, Jay Powell, there was an article actually that Zero Hedge pointed out back in January that I had talked about actually on another radio program called The Fed Has a Short Volatility Position. And if you scroll down to the bottom of it, I mean, basically it states that one of the bonds that they have $1.2 trillion of. And what he was trying to say is, hey, when we go to unload these things, it's not like the market's just going to say, hey, we've got $20 billion of these per month. They're going to look at it like, oh, wow, you've got another trillion over here. And so obviously, you know, the $20 billion, you know, it's not just you have $20 billion that you're going to sell. It's you've really got $1.2 trillion. When you take a look at the whole balance sheet, it's really $4 trillion. And so he goes on to say that we seem to be way too confident that exit can be managed smoothly. Markets can be much more dynamic than we appear to think. And what I want to do now is go to the podcast that I gave on January 25th, 2018,
where I talked about what are some of the worst things you could possibly do at that point is, again, January 25th. January 26th ended up being the global stock market peak. So, yeah, just a month ago, we hit another peak for the S&P 500 and Dow Jones, but not on a global level. On the global level, it was a day after I was on the Ernest Hancock program. But here we go. We're going to go take a listen to this.
Same deal. And then this is going to have trickle down everywhere. And another thing that was in that article that was particularly amazing to me is that you've got, Jerome Powell talking about unloading their short volatility position. So I don't know if he means that the Fed was actually buying VIX, which is the volatility index that just measures how much basically the stock market goes up and down. And so why?
Yeah. This is a derivative. The VIX is just your side bet on what the weather is going to be. What the hell is the Fed doing in that?
I mean, if you ask me what are the two worst investments you could have long term, I would probably say short the VIX and long-term treasury bonds. Now, look at what the Federal Reserve has. Supposedly, they're short the VIX, and they have long-term treasury bonds. I mean, it's like they're the worst-run hedge fund in the world, except they have such clout with $4.4 trillion that their clout then distorts everything else. So,
man, so I just had a really good, I think it was good, like 10-minute rant about that, but I didn't realize that I was only recording system audio on that stream, and it wasn't recording the actual mic audio, so ended up that all of that 10-minute little rant I gave that after this that I thought was really good, unfortunately, I did not record. So hopefully I can come up with something just as good as what I initially had. But the reason I talk about, bring back to this podcast is not to say, hey, look how smart I am, or look at how I, called these different things. It's not, about that. It's about that I'm trying to be ahead of things so then that way we can hold on to more of your purchasing power. That way we can avoid the absolute, worst things for people to do. That way, we can ultimately, make money throughout all this. And, just because some things that, have taken, a little bit longer than we thought to incur doesn't mean that, a reversal in that couldn't happen instantaneously. Like a reversal couldn't happen, overnight. You go back to, these volatility indexes and, that was filmed on January 25th, one day before the global stock market high. And then here you have, three different funds that lost. All of them lost about over 90% in the span of, pretty much like a day. So one of them's down 85% after hours, closing down 93%. And the ProShares product was down 96%. And I know another one where I had a client, unfortunately, who wasn't with me. It was with another advisor, but was involved in one of these where it completely blew up. And, luckily it wasn't, a gargantuan amount of money. But, it does pain me to see that there's certain things out there that are glaringly obvious, like the interest rate situation and how all that sequence of return leads into a situation where the Fed's damned if they do, damned if they don't from every angle. And what we're really trying to, and ultimately, I think the Fed's going to start printing more money. When they print more money, it's going to probably make the asset prices of everything go back up. But we don't know how much time there is going to be in between this. We don't know if it's going to take, a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or 2 days. I mean, nobody knows the time frame. So that's why, if you have a strategy where you think the Fed's going to ultimately print money, with our option strategies, if the market ends up going up 100%, then, we're going to be up, pretty darn close to that. And if the market's down, 80, 90%, then we're probably going to be down, probably mid single digits on our hedge positions, and most of our clients' portfolios are hedged, and the stuff that isn't hedged in many cases are because we think that that's what would then be going up during the response to the crisis. So whatever causes the initial crisis is not even what I'm concerned about. It's going to be the government's response to the crisis is ultimately is what is going to kick off this stuff and make it absolutely make sure that this that it's just going to be a terrible situation for most people. And most people are not my clients. Just a very small percentage of the world are my clients. And I would like to, if you guys know other people that you think like, hey, I hope that the guy I work with, maybe my neighbor, one of my friends, if there's people that I can help, people that are receptive to this message, especially if they're maybe more libertarian leaning, especially maybe if they like cryptocurrencies, we all know these, one or two people out there like that. I would love, an introduction, especially people that are close to retirement. I mean, really, we're giving people the best of both worlds. We're figuring out ways to get predictable income on one hand, and also then with the rest of their money, we're then trying to figure out ways where,
you know, we can benefit from market going up and then be out of the market when it's going down, but not through market timing. It's through our strategy. And, you know, what I did in the past was I would have a client that maybe had an 80 risk tolerance on a scale of 0 to 100, with 100 being the highest. And maybe I'd, you know, given what I saw was coming and given a lot of these extreme valuations, I would say, maybe let's put you at a 65. I mean, if they're a little bit older and I thought that maybe they couldn't really handle the risk as well as they thought they could, maybe I'd put you at a 55 or a 50. And to those people, I am genuinely sorry, because, you know, it was my, I was trying to, you know, have you guys, you know, lose as little as possible with the scenario that I saw unfolding, and, you know, and ended up not being the case that, you know, some of you could have made more money just being 100% in the S&P 500. And, but, you know, ultimately, you know, that, I think it was a kind of low odds scenario to get to where we've gotten to. And, you know, as being someone that did, you know, foresee Donald Trump winning, or thought that he had at least a very good chance of winning when no one seemed to think that, but ultimately I thought he was going to be the one to pick up the pieces, not going to try to blow up another bubble. And so when he's calling the Fed loco and he's calling them crazy and he's saying, you know, it's the greatest threat to humanity, he's right. It is the greatest threat, but for none of the reasons that he talks about. You know, he wants to make sure that they're going to keep rates low so that way they can keep the bubble going. But we need to have an honest conversation of, hey, it's a bubble. And so, you know, every time this rate gets up, it's like the, you know, it's like the pin's getting closer and closer and closer. And, you know, the bigger the bubble, the smaller the pin you need. And so, you know, before maybe you needed a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9% interest rate to pop this baby. Now, you know, maybe you need a 3% interest rate. And the Fed only controls the interbank lending rate overnight. So, you know, if you're Bank of America, you've got an extra $1 billion, you can, you know, loan it out to the Fed, he's going to loan it out to somebody else, and they pay you, you know, like 2% interest. For a while, it was 0% interest. But they don't actually control, I mean, it influences everything else, and the perception of what's going on there, it certainly has an influence, but eventually, they're going to lose control, and it's going to create a big sequence of return risk for the pension funds that are holding on to, you know, all these bonds when interest rates go up. Or the, you know, it's just, we've created so much malinvestment, and I see no way out of this possible without massive pain. And so a lot of people are trying to be safe. They're trying to conserve their dollars. They have, you know, a lot of your friends right now have 40, 50% of their money in bonds. And, you know, you'd be doing a huge service to them to say, hey, you know, I've got a financial advisor. I'd love for you to talk to him. Tip it show. Here's some videos. Maybe show them the one from October 2nd. Maybe even show them this one. Because I think what we're doing right now is really, you know, it's over and above what almost every other financial advisor is doing, because it is a little more complicated. I mean, it's simple, you know, if you know what you're doing, but, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, then yeah, then it would be a complicated strategy. But, you know, it's more of the why. And so this is, so the last video, we're getting into the why. This video also getting into the why. We're going to have other follow-up videos. And for those of you who like this stuff, great. And I'm going to keep coming out with more of it. And for those of you who just want to say, hey, I just want to know what you're, you know, doing with my money, and want to make sure it's safe. And I don't really need to, you know, be spoken to. Well, then that's fine too. You know, then you can basically don't have to watch. I mean, just know that, things are, that we, you know, are not asleep over here at the wheel, that we have a good idea of what we think is going to go on. And we're going to try to figure out how to conserve your purchasing power throughout all this. And, you know, sometimes it might mean conserving a dollar. Sometimes it might mean, you know, investing into other things that have plummeted in value, so, because that way we can ride them up. But we are, you know, the strategies we have going on, you know, I feel very, very confident in them right now. I sleep, you know, perfectly at night. Last night, because of the half Ironman yesterday, I was moving around a little bit and trying to stretch a little bit, but that's a one-off scenario. But, you know, I appreciate, you know, still watching. I appreciate everyone's patronage and for, you know, believing in me, and, you know, certainly means a lot to me. It's not something I take lightly. And throughout all this, you know, we really just want to make sure that we can hit your goals as efficiently as possible, and that we're not going to be subject to some major sequence of return risks. So yeah, maybe we could have made more money just being in nothing but Amazon or doing some really risky things. Or maybe if I put, you know, all your money in Bitcoin, then, you know, everyone would have been better off. But, you know, we're trying to do things, you know, manage this in a, we call it protective growth, because we need to make sure that we have upside, but then take you out of the market, you know, via the put options when things are absolutely crashing. So if you're listening to this and you're not one of my clients, you know, please email me at tim@innovativewealth.com, or you can go to thelibertyadvisor.com. There's a scheduling option down there. Or if you guys want to send your friends a link with, you know, maybe this video, maybe the video from October 2nd, then with a link, And you know, because really we're starting to run out of time here. And December is, I think, going to be one of the last shoes to drop, because that's when the Europeans will stop their version of quantitative easing or printing money. And you know, and my guess is that they're probably going to find some justification to, you know, say, hey, we're going to, you know, keep things going till June. And it's always, you know, easy to kick can down the road another 6 months. That will probably be the case. And I don't necessarily think that everyone's going to pick up on exactly everything I know immediately. But, you know, we could have just saw the start of it. You know, the market's done almost nothing since January 26th. I mean, January 26th was going to peak. It went down a lot. Then went right back up. Then broke the peak by a tiny, tiny bit. And now going back down. That's on the U.S. basis, global basis. That did hit the peak back at the beginning of the year. So why take on all the risk? You know, right now I think people are, you know, basically picking up pennies in front of steamrollers. But sometimes in the late stages of manias, when things go up the most, so maybe it does go up another 50, 100%. If it does, we're going to work out that way. If it goes down 50%, we've got the put options in place to make us safe that way. So I feel confident about this, and I feel, you know, definitely appreciative that you guys have your trust in me. It's not something I take lightly. And I hope you enjoyed this, and we'll have more of these. And thank you very much.